Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Around the Horn, a monthly fixed income roundtable with colleagues from UBS Asset Management. On a monthly basis, we are joined by top portfolio managers and business heads from Asset Management's Muni, Taxable Fixed Income, and Liquidity teams. The group shares candidly their views on markets and what they believe you should be focused on within the fixed income space. So at this time, let me pass it over to our host, moderator for this month's roundtable, Anthony Liotti, head of the Fixed Income SMA Advisory Group with UBS Asset Management.
Welcome to the September edition of Around the Horn. Like I always do, I'll be brief in my comments on a few macro thoughts before I kick it over to the team. There's clearly a lot going on within the market. So, you know, here we are halfway through the month, and we continue to witness a significant amount of volatility across the fixed income markets as well as the equity markets. I'd say of late, you know, it appears that the Fed, along with many market economists, have shifted their focus and zeroed in a bit more so on the employment picture and the consumer as the more prevalent economic data and catalyst for their decision making. It's clearly evident cuts are coming. That we know. But for now, it appears that the only remaining decision by the Fed will be to lower the Fed funds rate by either 25 or 50 basis points at their next meeting, which is scheduled for September the 18th. As of today, we did receive the release of CPI. The core number picked up a bit. The market is pricing in 25 basis points for that September meeting that I had mentioned. There's clearly some wavering of 25 or 50, but as a whole, the market is pricing in a total of 100 basis points in cuts for the remainder of the year. So there's a 25, and then you just do the math. It's got to be either another 25 and a 50 somewhere. That's what the market is right now pricing in. Turning a bit to performance, you know, now that we've turned the page on the summer months, and I'd say that many of the portfolio managers and investors might be a bit unhappy to see the change in the calendar, because the summer proved to be exactly what the fixed income markets needed, and that was a really attractive rally across most of the fixed income asset classes. To kind of put some things in perspective, year-to-date performance at the end of May across just about every domestic asset class were in the red, with the exception of perhaps a few maturity buckets on the very front end of the maturity curve, and then also with a few specific traditional in a few traditional investment grade asset classes. And here you are, you fast forward middle of September, and we're about to, you know, turn to get close to the end of summer, and there are so few, if any, major fixed income indices that are in the negative right now. All right. Of course, it is a nice to see, right? It's nice to see these markets turn positive in here. It's been a very challenging year. However, we still have some headwinds and the challenges to look forward to and to navigate. So we're not about to just get comfortable just yet. One last note, I'd say, before I turn over to my friends within the PM group. One of the major changes and shifts that we saw across the fixed income market just recently, is we finally saw the yield curve become uninverted between the twos and 10-year, right? This is the first time in more than 2 years that the yield curve remained inverted. I believe that is a historical number. The municipal bond curve still remains inverted, but all curves, I would say, are steepening in nature. Does this uninversion necessarily mean that a recession is on the near term, or does it signal that the Fed has successfully guided monetary policy to an economic soft landing? To be determined, right? That will be made clearer, I'd say, a bit more in the coming months. But I'd say, once again, it is still important to know that the very front end of the curve, and Dave will probably talk about this, bills are and munis to some extent are also slightly inverted to ones and two-year bonds. So, but I'd say this, we don't really expect this to last throughout the remainder of the year. So with that, let's get started, and let me hand it over to our portfolio managers that we have on the call. We'll start like we always do with David Walczak on the front end. David, take it away, sir.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. So as you kind of mentioned, you know, obviously one thing we've been pretty focused on here in the front end is just assessing, you know, whether or not the Fed is likely to go 25 or 50 basis points at the next meeting. coming up next week. And I think, you know, looking at the CPI data this morning, you know, it certainly supports the case for 25 basis points. You know, we did hear from some Fed officials after the non-farm payroll report last Friday, indicating that the Fed, you know, could maybe be a little bit more aggressive and go with more of a 50 basis point pace if the data warrants it. And I think that's, you know, some of the key language there. And, you know, given, as you mentioned, you know, non-farm payrolls, you know, kind of were steady and, yes, headline kind of came in lower than expectations, but we did see, you know, average hourly earnings come in a little bit, you know, better. And then also the unemployment rate, while it did match expectations, it did tick down by 10. So, by all means, you know, not flashing recessionary signals, at least as relates to the labor market. So we'll see what the Fed has in store for us next week. But I think we, at this point, would argue that they're likely, you know, there's a higher chance they go 25 versus 50. We'll also be watching for an updated dot plot. You know, the last one that the Fed released was back after the June meeting. So obviously a lot has changed since then. So we wouldn't be surprised to see some downward movement in terms of the distribution of dots, you know, not only for this year, but also for next year and beyond us as well. You know, Anthony, you kind of touched on, you know, inversions and re-steepenings of curves. You know, just one measure I wanted to kind of highlight here for us in the front end, just looking at the spread between the two-year Treasury and Fed funds. As we sit here today, that stands at a negative 183 basis points, meaning that the two-year is yielding 183 basis points less than the upper bound of the Fed funds targeted range, which is still at 550. You basically have to go back to the great financial crisis to see such an inversion, you know, historically, even during the COVID, you know, risk off event, you know, we saw this curve only invert between 80 to 90 basis points. So, quite clearly, you know, we're at pretty extreme levels here. So, you know, certainly either the Fed has to move aggressively lower or maybe there is a little bit, of upward momentum in terms of the 2 year. So,
great call
to keep it on. On our side. So, I think with that, I'll pass it over to Dave Rothweiler to talk about some of our thoughts a little bit further out on the liquidity curve.
Okay, thanks, Dave. So, you know, starting with duration in our short duration 1-to-3 strategy, we have continued to target a longer duration posture, with most accounts averaging about a 0.05 to 0.07 years longer than the benchmark. In the ultra short strategy, we've been longer than the benchmark with a duration of about 0.6 to 0.7 year range. In terms of corporate supply, yesterday the market printed about $17.5 billion, with books being about 2.9 times oversubscribed. For the week, we had $24 billion. And for the month of September, about $109 billion. I think it was last week, just in 2 days, we printed something like $70 billion in just 2 days. Year-to-date, we've had about $1.2 billion in corporate IG new issuance, and that's about up about 29% versus this point, 2023. So my point in all this is, in terms of the bid for the market for credit, we are printing near record amounts of new issuance and getting it put away. So definitely a healthy corporate credit market. We've been saying for quite a while we favor an up in quality bias to our credit positioning. Looking at the 1-to-3 ICE B of A indices, triple Bs have widened recently to about plus 5 or 8 basis points relative to the A to triple A's. Triple B excess returns now are trailing in the month-to-date, 3-month time periods, probably reflecting some softer growth expectations in the market and due to some of the recent employment data. Drilling down in the corporate sector, while we still like the big U.S. money center banks, we still like the G-SIB banks, we are still avoiding most regional banks. Consistent with our up in quality theme, the big six are highly rated and they continue to be well bid in the front end. So, with that, I'll pass it on to Dave Vignola.
Yeah, thanks, David. You know, on the investment grade side, you know, the sector continues to be a preferred asset class with investors, and a couple of reasons for that is one, kind of the Fed's plan is working. I mean, growth is slowing, but not too dramatically, and inflation, even though, like Anthony said, it was a little sticky today and unchanged, it has been trending downward, and we've seen unemployment drift up a little bit, but not materially. So that soft landing scenario continues to be the base case outlook. And so that is very supportive for investment grade credit. And then from a technical perspective, we've seen tremendous amount of inflows into the asset class. We've seen year to date over $250 billion of inflows as investors continue to favor the space because it's high quality as well as attractive yields that you can get in the investment grade sector. So from that standpoint, and then you look at fundamentals, second quarter fundamentals, second quarter reviews, the fundamentals are still in good shape. I mean, revenue grew again in the second quarter. Earnings was up. Earnings for corporate America in the second quarter were up as well. And debt, you know, rose, but it rose moderately. So balance sheets are still quite strong on the corporate side. So when you have strong fundamentals, strong technicals, and yields, they have come down. The yields in the corporate index are, you know, through 5%. But historically, the levels we're at, you know, mid to upper 4% range now, that's still, over the last 10 years, that number is still higher than 80% of the yields that you've seen in the corporate index in the past 10 years. So still an attractive entry point from a historical perspective. So, you know, from that standpoint, we still like the asset class and credit. And we've been, from a duration perspective, you know, for active intermediate strategy, we've definitely been, you know, targeting around 4.25 duration, which is, you know, overweight versus, you know, versus the benchmark. And continue to, as David said, from a financial sector perspective, like the Money Center Bank and some of the fewer large regional banks. But really from a quality perspective, continue to be folks a little more up in quality in the BBB space across the asset class as the economy slows. But in general, you know, from a sector perspective, the only sector that I would say we're a little cautious on is the cable media sector. I think there's a lot of potential event risk and M&A activity there. As that sector battles for the streaming services, as that continues to evolve, and the battle for market share in that sector, I think will prevent, you know, create some opportunities down the road. But we want to be a little cautious from that standpoint in the sector from a positioning standpoint. And then in general, we've been continued to be for a while. We've been overweight more of the belly of the credit of the kind of the curve for that, the active intermediate strategy. But we have been adding a little more exposure in the front end of the curve, because as Anthony mentioned earlier, you know, the treasury curve finally normalized, and we think that trend will continue over time. So we want to have a little more exposure in the kind of that, you know, 2 to 4 year part of the curve as the treasury curve steepens and the long end kind of treasury curve 10 years stay between that 3.54% range, the target, and then we see front end yields, treasury yields continue to trend downward as the Fed begins to cut the rate. So still positive. Everything's good on credit. Very little idiosyncratic concerns across the board, because corporate America is quite strong fundamentally. And we continue to favor you know, the financials, the energy sector, utilities have been a favorite positioning for all the portfolios and in the investment grade strategies across the board. So with that, I will pass it on to Matt Iannucci to talk about the high yield strategies.
Great. Thanks a lot, Dave. So since the last time we spoke, high yield yields have compressed about 19 basis points, with yields now settling in around 7.27%. You know, over this period, we saw high yield spreads were not able to keep up with the pace at which treasuries tightened and ended up widening about 15 basis points to the current level of 341. As my colleagues have mentioned, you know, the Fed has all but confirmed September start for cuts, but the mixed data has left conviction levels low on whether we see 25 or 50 basis point move. This uncertainty has really given the market some cause for volatility to remain elevated, albeit not as extreme as we saw in levels during late July and early August sell-off. Post Labor Day, we did see the much anticipated new issue calendar turn on, much like the investment grade space in force, with over 20 deals printing and easily absorbed by the market. And for the most part, the deals were priced at or near tight ends of initial price talk. It's worth noting that year-to-date high yield issuance has printed about $211 billion, up 90% year-over-year. That said, only $48 billion of this is non-refinance deals, which represents only a modest 3% growth for the high yield universe. This coupled with the positive inflows of $11 billion into the space, as well as the high monthly coupon payments, has kept the technical picture, you know, really strong. In turn, the knock-on effects has what we've seen is that default rates have been declining. The last 12 months, at the end of August, we've seen default rates reported at 1.7. This is down from 2.85% at the start of the year and remains well below the 25-year historical average of 3.4%. Overall, we view short duration as having attractive income carry levels, but trading at fair value. We anticipate fundamentals to remain healthy, much like what you heard from Dave and other credit specialists, and for technicals to remain strong for the reasons I mentioned earlier. But we are conscious about yields trading near their 2.5-year tights and have turned a little bit more cautious regarding the growing evidence of economic slowdown forming. We don't believe that this will have a heavy impact on credit, but more or less at the lower end of the risk spectrum, we could see some overreaction, which we see often, and then buyers ensue. With the volatility expected to remain elevated, we'd expect to see investment opportunities become available. We currently have a preference to gear the portfolios to a higher quality where we see attractive opportunities within the BB space over the similar duration BBB's credits. As the relationship now trades near year-to-date wides of 120 basis points to each other.
Thanks. As Anthony touched upon, during the month of August, we saw a rally, particularly in that front end of the curve. More so, I'd say, in that 1 to 6 year spot. The market was just playing catch-up and factoring in the Fed's future moves along with economic data. As we headed into September, strength in treasuries and monthly coupon and redemption cash provided a pretty supportive backdrop in the market. Just looking over the course of last week, short-dated tax-exempt bond yields fell 9 basis points in that one-year area and 8 basis points in that 26 to 29-year area. So MMD bumped 2 basis points in 4 years, and that was the fourth time we've seen that in the past 5 sessions. So following last week's adjustments, the MMD AAA scale has become less inverted. You're looking now at 5 basis points, really between that one-year MMD AAA spot and the six-year spot. We also saw another volatile month just in terms of the daily and weekly BRDN market, just big swings in inventory and rates this past month. With over 200 basis points move, we saw in daily rates and VRDN supply ranging from $2 to $5 billion in average. So floater yields climbed to over 4%. I would expect to see continued fluctuation over the remainder of the year in terms of just floater yields and SISMA. I would expect money market fund outflows to materialize. So we should see pressure on floater and fixed rate yields following the September Fed meeting. Overall, though, in the market, I think it's been a good opportunity to leg into our market for technical reasons. We have started to see supply coming back now as we move past August reinvestment and into a weaker reinvestment month in September. New issue, it's really where the value has been, going up in credit quality. The highest percentage of our purchases, looking at our purchase sale report, coming from these primary deals, just at more attractive levels.
Lisa, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Great stuff. I will say this before I turn over to my colleagues for some Q&A. I mentioned on our last call that there was, $6 trillion of money market funds or highly liquid solutions to use sort of domestically still being, invested by clients who and investors, whether it be two-legged individuals or institutional investors. We continue to see a broad shift in investor appetite to reposition those assets to longer-dated securities. I think you heard a little bit of that in this call. And the reason for that is, as mentioned, the rates have come down a little bit. We're clearly off of the highs, but yet I think you kind of heard it throughout each of the different PMs. There is still value out there. If the expectation is for this rate market to continue to move lower, now would probably be a good time to really have those discussions about extending duration and locking in some of those higher rates. I would just say this real quick in summary, a couple notes. Clearly, volatility is going to remain in the market share. We have plenty to disrupt the markets in the coming weeks and months. On the muni side, I think Lisa's comments about supply, I think it's going to be some very good, we feel as a group, going to be some very good opportunities to deploy cash. So for clients that have seen rates move down fairly aggressively, especially on the front end, by no means is the time over to get invested in this market. There could be a really good opportunity coming upon us real quickly. And as Matt said, buying the dips or the overreaction in the marketplace. And those overreactions and dips will clearly come. Credit-wise, technicals remain very strong, I think, across all fixed income. That is a good thing for now. So with that, thank you very much. A little bit longer, but I think a great call. Stay well, and we'll talk to you in October. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.